OTB Sports Radio.
This Sunday on OTB Sports Radio, we're bringing you an exclusive first listen of a special interview with Muhammad Ali's former business manager, Gene Kilroy. The last survivor from Ali's inner circle joined myself, Shane Hannan, for an hour full of great insight and never-before-told stories, such as this from just minutes before the rumble in the jungle when Ali fought George Foreman.
Ali had no fear.
And the time Ali went looking for Joe Frazier.
Ali gets out of the car, the cops said, "Where do you think you're going?" He said, "I'm looking for Joe Frazier. Where's Joe Frazier?"
Hear it first this Bank Holiday Sunday at 7 p.m. exclusively on OTB Sports Radio. Listen on offtheball.com or download the Go Loud app.
The OTB Podcast Network.
OTB AM.
With Aviva, Ireland's largest insurer, celebrating 10 years of iconic sporting moments at the Aviva Stadium.
So, Aviva, Ireland's largest insurer, is marking the 10-year anniversary of the official opening of the Aviva Stadium and its proud long-term sponsorship of the iconic venue. To celebrate this milestone, Aviva are paying tribute to some of the most iconic sporting moments of the last decade. Feel free to join in. You can follow Aviva Ireland on Instagram and on Twitter and share your favourite Aviva Stadium memories using the hashtag SafeToDream. The final is happening today. It is Robbie Henshaw and his try against England in 2015 up against Jacob Stockdale and his famous try against the All Blacks in 2018. So get up there and start voting now. It'll be interesting to see who comes out on top there. Delighted to say that, as ever, here on a Friday morning on OTB AM, Alan Quinlan is with us, but also joined in the company this morning by Joe Schmidt. Joe, how are things? You're very welcome.
Yeah, thanks. They're not too bad. The weather's good. It's a bizarre time, but yeah, we're getting through.
A bizarre time indeed. How have you spent the last couple of months?
At home, most of the time. It's been fantastic, actually. I was due to be doing events in Hong Kong, Dubai, due to be in Lisbon, London, all over the place. And instead, I've had a real quality time at home with my kids. One's working from home, one's just finished her third year radiography exams, and one's just finished some transition exams that they were doing in Tyrannial College. So, yeah, we've had a really good family time.
It's interesting, isn't it, how we've all been forced into this period of reflection and how I think everybody's coming out at the back end of it, assuming they've stayed healthy, thinking to themselves, well, I'm really thankful for this opportunity to either spend quality time with your family or have a period to think about things that you possibly didn't even know you needed to think about.
Yeah, it was part of the plan for me, having retired from coaching and getting the opportunity to spend more time with the family. And then inevitably things crop up and you say, I'll do that. I was in Killarney with Liam O'Connor doing a great night at the SEM there in St. Brendan's in Killarney. Then the following day I was in Oxford doing a session and then doing a Q&A. And the next day the whole thing got shut down. That was March 11 and 12. And so since then I have been home, and that was the plan, going right back to the November, this actual game that you mentioned with Jacob Stockdale when I said that I was going to finish up coaching.
I can't quite tell if it's the perfect time to have stepped away from rugby or not. Does it give you too much time to think about stepping away from the game? I guess people who are still involved with a team have something to look forward to in August, as is the case with some of the Pro 14 teams. And for somebody who's not in the game, there isn't exactly that next match to look forward to. I'm not sure how you viewed it from that perspective.
No, it was already like that. I went and spent a couple of weeks at Claremont just in January there, really just as a sounding board for the coaching staff, and really enjoyed it, I've got to say. I was on the pitch but not coaching and just observing what was happening. And you do keep a taste for it. So I felt I was close enough to the periphery. I've had a number of Zoom calls just with a number of coaches in Australia. Globally, there's a COVID-19 group that Bernard Jackman's part of, but a lot of Southern Hemisphere coaches are part of that I had a really good chat with. I had 90 minutes with all the top 14 coaches, which was a massive challenge with my best French for 90 minutes is exceedingly difficult for me. So I still feel I'm on the periphery and still contributing and still thinking about the game and still certainly I'd love to be watching a bit of live rugby.
What was that morning to you, Joe? By the way, what was the what was that about? What were you doing with the top 14 coaches?
I've been part of this breakdown working group, and so I just did a session with them on the kind of direction that it's heading. I see there's a lot of noise around different laws that are potentially going to be trialed. Those laws are a long way from becoming laws in the game of rugby as we know it at the moment. And some of them are COVID related, obviously, and others are more long term. But some of those laws, they're offered up, and then different countries can potentially accept including one of them in their domestic competition to try to see how they work in a live game of rugby.
It's slightly bizarre in that they've given the recommendations, people will have seen them over the last couple of days, and sort of left it up to the individual countries to decide themselves whether they want them or not. I think New Zealand have already indicated that they don't, and by all accounts, most countries are going to follow suit. Like, it's slightly bizarre in that they've come up with these are the COVID-only related rule changes, but they're leaving it up, they're almost devolving responsibility for implementing them.
Well, because of the practicality of them, I think. I think there was immediately some pushback from countries who said, well, reset scrums. What's the difference between having one scrum and then having another one? And what happens if there's 30 scrums in the game because there's lots of errors, as opposed to 10 scrums in the game where you might get four resets? So I think it was just the practicality of actually doing them. And that generally is the way that law changes are made, in that they are offered up, and if they're being trialed, countries opt in with one of their domestic competitions. It may be an age grade. The hips down tackle trial was being done in French lower grades at age grade level. So they do experiment like that, so that they can get a little bit of a taste of how that, because what you don't want is those unforeseen consequences that actually don't add value to the game. They changed where you could collapse them all a few years ago. So everyone just collapsed them all, and you had 15 players spread across the pitch, and it was very hard to go anywhere. So what you did was you limited one of the ways that you can progress the ball upfield, and then everyone knew that you couldn't do it that way, so everyone just spread out. And it's things like that they want to try to avoid when they put it into general law where everyone's got to follow it.
Have you found that the family time over the last couple of months, or the Zoom calls, the thinking about it, makes you miss rugby more than you had previously, that your thirst is back now almost to get back into it? Or what sort of an impact has that had on your own thoughts about where you're going to be once all this thing ends?
From the time we finished, and as disappointed as I was when we finished, you know, and I look back at that game, and you know, if you compare the game in November 2018, in the first 4 minutes, they had 90 seconds on our 5-meter line and couldn't score, where they scored quite quickly against us. But after 4 minutes, instead of CJ Stander winning a turnover, Gary Ringrose and Robbie Henshaw collided, and we lost Gary, who got 17 stitches, and then Robbie had to go off and get stitched up because we only had one player to come on, and we became a bit disheveled because, you know, at 6 minutes 20, Jacob Stockdale takes a great kickoff receive from Johnny, and we actually create great space, but we don't quite throw the pass, and they end up right back down on the attack, and it builds to a try from set play in the line out. We create an overlap, and Johnny gets hit with the ball. They kick it through, and they score again in the corner. And it just seemed that we, in contrast to November 2018, we just had no flow in that first half.
So I'm taken from what you're saying then, the giving us that debrief of events, Joe, that the appetite is up almost, that you're thinking, the appetite to get back involved in rugby at some level must be itching away at you. Is that a fair reading of that?
Well, no, you just think, we can solve that. We can solve that. And, and you know, that's part of what drives you as a, I think, not just a coach, but as a human being. You see something and you could think that, okay, well, I've got a solution for that. I'd love to implement it. But, you know, I had a couple of hours on the phone with Andy Farrell last week, and he will do a great job. And so at some stage you have to step right away, I think. And if you do go back in at some stage, it's got to be almost disassociated with your previous job or your previous role, because you want to keep going forward rather than at the moment I keep going back and reliving a bit of a nightmare when you know you're ready to go forward. And luckily enough, I've gone forward with my family, and it's been, you know, busy. We've had a really good time together. The weather has helped, you know, so it's not dominating my consciousness, but subconsciously it eats away a little bit for sure.
Like even that, we haven't brought you on to relive your World Cup experience, by the way. So we will go on to talk about Aviva, your moments at the Aviva. But just that you bring it up, like maybe it's the perfect timing almost in some regards, that your capacity to properly deal with what went on, obviously. And I know that you've come out and obviously you had your book and you've spoken about what you believe went wrong at the World Cup. But like maybe the capacity now to, before the, you know, this timeout be forced upon you, to try and deal with it properly and rationalise it and come to your own conclusions in some quiet time is maybe the best thing for you as a coach going forward.
Yeah, and I think the other thing is I feel massively refreshed. I do think that I'd been going 17 years in a row where I'd always dovetail one job into the next or overlap them, even trying to kind of do the recruitment for Leinster when I was finishing off with Clermont. And it's funny because they're an hour ahead in France, and there's a group called Le Premier, because it's today that we won the Bouclier de Brennus 10 years ago. And so I've had this flood of calls or texts or messages all around with all sorts of different ridiculous photos of the day and the days that followed. So I haven't just got the frustrating memories. There are some great memories. And from that perspective, you remember those days as well, and you feel like you'd love to project yourself back into them. And so, yeah, I think it's a real mix, but it has been great to step away, to take a nice deep breath and feel a little bit more re-energized. I felt by the time I got to the World Cup, I'd had a few, I've been back and forth to New Zealand three times in a short period of time. I really did feel that my energy levels weren't where they'd been. And I feel that they are certainly back now after being locked up for 10 weeks.
Well, we've been doing plenty of reflection this week in terms of our greatest Aviva moments in terms of rugby. Alan Quinlan, by the way, you're very welcome. Our final this morning.
Morning, lads.
Robbie Henshaw against Jacob Stockdale. I'm sure a lot of what Joe is saying there kind of rings true with you as well. It's impossible to not, I'd say, look back on your own career, but even from working on the sidelines as a pundit, Robbie Henshaw, Jacob Stockdale, two incredible moments at the Aviva, two very, very famous nights, particularly Stockdale against the All Blacks. Alan, I think it's right up there as one of the most incredible atmospheres we've had in Irish sport.
Yeah, it is, Owen. I think when you ask me what are the best moments, yeah, and I was asked this last week, I automatically the All Blacks game comes back into my mind. And then when you're breaking it down, those individual moments, I think the quality of the Jacob Stockdale try was sensational. The execution, you create your own little bit of luck when you put in a good kick and you chase it hard, and he got that bounce and stuff. And I think it was on the back of, there's loads of big moments when you win any match, and I know this from a player as well, coaches know it, big moments sometimes are not noticed, like a little turnover, a hand in a line out just deflecting the ball. putting a bit of pressure on someone to stop them executing their kick or pass the way they would have liked. They're moments that coaches pick up in matches that can just make the difference and lead to you going down the field 80 yards and scoring a try and winning a game. I always thought when I played that, and Paul O'Connell was really brilliant at this, is, you know, if we're defending 5 yards out on our line, and should we contest in the line out? Should we stay in the floor? Should we be brave and put someone up in the air and try and steal that line out or stop the opposition from taking it clean and then maybe mauling us over the line? And so many times, particularly with Munster, I think we lifted guys in lineouts, we went after the opposition, we stole a lineout ball, and the psychological effect that would have on the opposition, where they think, well, we're in a great position to score, and 5 minutes later, we, through relentless intensity and really good accuracy from our clearing our own lines, we're scoring at the other end. And you have those contrasts in games, and you know, somebody makes an impact tackle where they put someone back behind the game line. There are moments in games that coaches and players look and they lead to a score. I'm sure Joe will say, well, the execution, the breakdown was so important for Jacob's try. And sometimes the forward who made that brilliant clean out or sealed off the ball brilliantly doesn't get the credit. So they're the moments coaches and players see. And you kind of run back and you high-five each other, where the fellow who scored the try is waving to the crowd, and it's amazing. So it's Peter O'Mahony's turnover for that penalty was what led to that try. Brilliant turnover. Johnny kicks it into the corner, execute the line-out, play it infield, and went back blindside. So, you know, you have to give credit to the people who contributed along the way. And but then the individual, it's like the striker in soccer. He's the guy who's the last touch, and sometimes his brilliance is the one that puts the ball in the net. So it was a sensational try. And the Robbie Henshaw try, not as flashy in the sense individual brilliance. Robbie does go through the air brilliantly and jump over Elliot Daly. It was a great kick by Conor Murray. But it was on the back of probably 11 or 12 phases where the execution was, a couple of times it looked like England may turn the ball over, and Ireland originally turned the ball over from a kick into the corner from Johnny, where the backs counter Rog Zebo, Rob Kearney, Jordy Murphy, when Anthony Watson caught, Jonathan Joseph caught the ball. So that counter ruck, Robbie Henshaw wouldn't be scoring on the other corner of the field if the Irish backs and Irish players didn't counter ruck and force that turnover. So they're all kind of moments that players and coaches really see. The person in the crowd with respect doesn't see that. They see the brilliance at the end. But, you know, like I said, it's the person who finishes off that score that gets the plaudits. But they know themselves, you know. Jacob Stockdale would know after the game he has to have that little bit of brilliance, but, you know, and that's where you acknowledge stuff in the dressing room, you know, about a clean out, about a tackle, about a line out steal or whatever. But there were two great moments. Anytime you score a try and beat England in at any stage is massive as Irish fans. And then, of course, the second win against the All Blacks.
Yeah, and appreciate it here, Joe. It's like asking you to pick between your children, but to pick up on Alan's point there, like the Stockdale try, was that straight off the it was like a switch back and field pass off a lineout. Looked like a very rehearsed move, and the sort of trademark Stockdale chip over the top. Was that something that was straight off the training ground? And so, a very leading question, but so is that the one that gives you most satisfaction, or what's your pick between the two?
I think it's very tight. I do think Jacob's won. Quinny mentioned Pete got the steal on the ground. Pete also won the line out superbly. He got up. The line out was perfect. Johnny has forced a pass earlier than we wanted him to. We wanted to drag the All Black defence a little bit further toward the midfield, but Dane Coles flies off the line out so hard that Johnny's got a pass a little bit earlier. I think the two runs, no one sees Josh van der Vlier or CJ Stander in the crowd, really, but the All Black defenders do. So they're looking at those two, thinking they're going to get the ball from Johnny when Bundy comes back on the reverse line, links up with Jacob. Ben Smith comes up into the defensive line to shut down Rory Best, the very fast, and dangerous winger because he's bounced back to the edge. And that worked out perfectly for us because it allowed the space behind. If Ben Smith had sat in behind a little bit, it was almost reminiscent of Ben Smith in Chicago coming up too early and Zeebs getting the kick and the space in behind before Connor Murray made that smashing tackle on Julian Salvia. So those are the moments that Quinny was talking about. The one with Robbie Henshaw where he goes over Alex Goode, who's good in the air, very effective in the air, but Robbie's got to catch the ball over his left shoulder, and it's really hard to do because you can't see the ball the whole time, so you pick it up quite late. And I just thought Robbie did a super job as well. In the context of
Milton, Joe, was it? There is that context of the advantage was coming almost, and so exactly. Conor Murray could actually get it away. And
yeah, we had penalty advantage on the Conor Murray one. So that, you know, you were thinking, well, you can get three, but let's chase seven. And in the end, that seven, I think the final result was 13-9 in that game. And that was the difference. So, it was brilliant for us. They were both brilliant tries. I do think Jacob had to probably do a little bit more work. And he had to be brave. He'd been charged down by Kieran Reid not long before that, where Rito picks it up, and if he gets it to Damien McKenzie, they score. So to go back to his left foot, as classy as he is with it, shows a level of confidence that he needed to demonstrate. Whereas Robbie is fantastic in the air for us anytime. The ball goes up, and he did a great job because not only did he have to catch it over his left shoulder, he had to get it down. He's right against the touchline, the touch and goal. I didn't think when I first saw it, watching live, that he'd stayed in field and got the ball down in time. So, yeah, all I could say is, as a spectator at the time, they were both incredible moments for me.
Joe, we had Jacob Stockdale on the show earlier this week, and he said that part of the game plan in 2018 was to bully the bully, which, if you had to pick one name, would have been Brodie Retallick on this occasion. How big a factor was that for you going up against the All Blacks on multiple occasions, that he did have to bully the bully, given how physical they can be, given how much they can bend the rules, especially if you go back to, I don't want to name names here, but perhaps the Richie McCaw era. How big a factor was that for you as a coach going up against the All Blacks?
It went back to that game in 2016 where there was some play there where Malachi Fekitoa took Zeebs' head off, where Sam Kane's shoulder connected with Robbie's head and he was unconscious before he hit the ground. There was a forearm to Conor Murray's neck. There were a number of incidents in that game that, in the review of that game, were really disappointing. So we said, right, if that's what they're bringing, let's bring what we need to counteract that. We knew that we'd poked the bear 2 weeks before in Chicago. So the players were very, very motivated to make sure they brought a real physicality, not the same sort of physicality that was loose and could potentially offer up penalties. I think Rory Best that day, when he hit Brodie Retallick, there was another tackle with James Ryan and Devin Toner, the two lads hitting Brodie Retallick at the same time, smashed them backwards. Those are the moments Quinny was just talking about before. They are the moments that don't feature as the 10 best moments in the Aviva, but I tell you what, they're great moments for the psyche of the team in the white-hot atmosphere that you're playing in.
Yeah, and what, like, in terms of the coaching there, Joe, like, I mean, obviously we're focusing on the two tries, and just looking at the poll there, there's one clear leader, certainly at the minute anyway, and the poll is a bit to run, but there's one, and you might not get a lot of prizes for picking which one it is. But from your own point of view, over the years, like, coaching at the Aviva, what's your own standout memory? Because I'd be conscious that obviously for Joe Punter going in, obviously looking at those tries and the enormity of them, and maybe the moments they came at, particularly with the Stockdale try, the importance of them. But for you, I'd be conscious that maybe there's something else, another moment either on the pitch or off it that stands out for you.
I I could say there are too many to really reflect on. I mean, going right back to the time I spent with Leinster, the day that there was minus 10 degrees, there was snow everywhere. We had to win against Claremont, and guys like Ken Healy, Jamie Heaslip, Sean O'Brien. Shawnee was injured even, so we were a little bit numbers down. Guys like Dominic Ryan came into the squad, and Johnny Dricko, those guys who delivered continuously for us to get a really big result there. I think the Leicester quarterfinal that year, I don't know if you remember Easton Athewa's try from virtually the halfway, where he mesmerised the Leicester defence, and we just hung in and to win that game. And then so many days with Ireland. The day we beat Australia, where, we had I think Kieran Marmion was playing on the wing, and he did an unbelievable tackle on Folau at one stage, where it looked like Australia were going to score in the left-hand corner for sure. And it was a brilliant moment. But even in that All Black game, the scrum, in the 47th minute, just before, when you're getting close to that half-time period, the scrum where you can see Tyke Furlong has spat Carl Tuanuku-Afe out the side of the scrum. Some of them aren't tries. Pete O'Mahony's gadget arms to get that ball that they kicked through in that game was a phenomenal moment. I thought they were going to score there as well. There are so many moments. Ian Henderson's try against England. It's actually nice for me to reflect on those instead of going back to that quarterfinal. Oh, yeah. It's been an incredible privilege, really, just to be on the periphery of some of those great moments. And looking at the crowd and watching the crowd when Jacob scored, looking back, it was phenomenal. The amount of passion and emotion, no wonder the players picked up and played well, because there is no place better than the Aviva, not just for the atmosphere, but for the really tangible support you sense that the players have out on the pitch.
When you're speaking about these moments, Joe, and you've been very good with your time, just as a final point, do you miss it when you're reflecting on the good moments? And I know you've probably reflected on some of the lower moments over the last couple of weeks as well.
Yeah. Anyone who had the opportunity to get that adrenaline rush and be part, as I say, on the periphery of that, and to live in amongst it. And I think the other thing that I really miss are the people that I worked with. I've been in touch with quite a few of them. A couple of them have come around for a socially distant chat in the last few weeks. And it's been great to catch up with them and chat away. And I think the quality of the people, the staff behind the scenes, and the quality of the people that are the players, I probably miss that more than anything else, because I enjoyed their company and I enjoyed having a collective purpose with them to try to do the best that we could.
Yeah,
Joe, just on that point, on the socially distanced chats with former colleagues, and you mentioned that you had a chat with Andy Farrell just before we let you go. I just wanted to ask you about, I presume you're not going to give us the ins and outs of what that chat was, but how difficult is it for you to, obviously he's the new man in, I'm sure you're conscious of not saying anything that undermines his position, obviously, but how difficult is it when you're in those chats? And I'm sure he's, as anybody would rightfully, look for a bit of guidance or advice or a second thought on his own process and how he's going about things. So how conscious are you in those conversations of obviously letting Andy Farrell get on with being Andy Farrell and trying to give him a bit of guidance that might help?
Yeah, no, look, we worked together for so long. He doesn't need guidance. He knows exactly what he's doing, and he'll go about things in his own fashion. But I know it'll be a well thought out fashion, and he'll have done his homework, and he's got a good crew working with them. We talked about Wigan Rugby League. We talked about the NRL starting up, and we talked about the situation in Australia. I'd been talking to Brad Thorne via messaging just about the three players who have been put on the back burner, including Isaac Rodder, who is a real up and comer for the Wallabies. I think he's only 23, 24 at the most. He's had probably 23 or 24 test matches already as a second row and a good athlete. So, you know, we talked about the quality of the people that we work with as opposed to sometimes people who might be more difficult to work with. And, you know, even we know each other's families pretty well and even just about the, you know, what might happen. I know the RFU have got plan A, B and C, and I just think that they've handled this whole situation incredibly well. And for people to say that things aren't sustainable, all sorts of things aren't sustainable at the moment. That's why there's a COVID-19 payment for a number of people who aren't working. This is unprecedented, really. It's that calamity that blindsides you. And the RFU, I think, have done a really good job, and the players have been really receptive to that. So I do think that a lot of the conversation was almost peripheral to rugby.
Yeah, it certainly seems that way, and there are certainly more important things. But at the same time, it'll be great to have it back in whatever 2 months' time or however far we are from it.
I can't even wait to see, you know, June 13, Super Rugby Aotearoa kicks off. We'll be able to watch some live rugby on TV. Which would be nice. So
the Premier League isn't going to do it for you, Joe, and June 17th, is it?
I think it's June 13, 14 for
the Premier League, the football.
That comes after. That comes after. I've had a bit of a chat with one of the managers there recently, and I know that they're all incredibly keen to get up and running again. And it's great because they're trying to be as thorough as they can with the testing they're doing and making sure, therefore, that they don't get some transmission of the coronavirus from players playing the game. So I think everyone's trying to be as probably vigilant as they can be, so that players are protected and obviously closed stadiums. It was bizarre. I don't know if you watched Parramatta versus Brisbane in the NRL, where you had to see a bit of live sport, but they had the canned crowd noise, and right. You look at the stadium and you're hearing these fantastic yells of support, but there's actually nobody there. So it's a little bit bizarre. It's a little bit artificial, but certainly the contact wasn't. It was pretty physical.
We've got one comment in before we wrap from Darrow O'Toole saying, Joe's last game in the Aviva against Wales, that atmosphere was incredible and we played brilliantly. What a day. It was brilliant. And make sure to get voting now for the best rugby moment at the Aviva Stadium. It is Robbie Henshaw against Jacob Stockdale. Joe Schmidt, Alan Quinlan, you've been great with your time. Thanks, million, for popping on the call.
No problem. Thanks.
Cheers, lads. OTB
AM. With Aviva, Ireland's largest insurer, celebrating 10 years of iconic sporting moments at the Aviva Stadium. That was an OTB Podcast Network presentation.